Hi, it's Dolores. I am at the Isambard Kingdom Brunel Museum in a pop-up garden. It's just this little... it's not a pop-up garden. It's a garden that's already here. There's a pop-up cocktail bar. I'm not really a massive cocktail lover. But I thought I'd come along to this because it sounds really lovely. Because I love the name Isambard Kingdom Brunel. Always have done. Anyway, we're going to go on a tour down the shaft. Oh, I can't wait. It's exciting. So I'm on my own. I was meant to be meeting someone, but they've not turned up. But then again, I did send them a message saying I wasn't going. But we'll see.
Amongst the first people to descend the stairs and enter. I need to give you a health and safety tour. The chamber itself is huge, but the doorway into the chamber is this high. It's this high. So you need to stoop low. But you only stoop low for about 4 feet, and then it opens into this huge, huge chamber. So if you have a problem with confined spaces, then let the person in front of you clear the tunnel. Because if they clear the tunnel, then you can see right the way through, and there is no sense of confinement or entrapment. And if you have a problem with heights, then when you get through the tunnel, you're standing on a builder's scaffolding platform and you're looking down the bottom of the shaft. So you need to come in very closely. The staircase is a temporary staircase. It's a builder's scaffolding staircase. But it has a handrail and it has steps and it's inspected twice a year and it got a clean bill of health in April. It's insured, but please be careful. You'd rather not pay. It's insured, but if you don't mind your head, you will bump it. You will. I have to scare you a little so that you take it seriously. But it'll be fine. Follow me. Left hand on here, and your right foot on the first metal slat. You keep your left hand here, and your left foot there. And then your right foot here. So left foot there. And lead with the right foot. Twist, spin, duck. All right?
Oh, I'm going in a tiny little hole. Going, oh my God. Wow. It's a huge space. Oh my God, it's wonderful. I hear it's all echoey. It's just a massive space. Oh, it's really impressive. Wow.
Black on the walls is soot from 19th century steam locomotives. Yeah. And you'll hear them from, not steam trains, but you hear the trains beneath our feet because we're at this level. The tunnels are beneath our feet. Now that noise is the pumps. They're still pumping water out of the tunnel. And the other noise you hear down here is trains on the London Overground.
Like to. This is the grand entrance hall to the eighth wonder of the world. I'm going to hand out some books and I'll collect them in again afterwards, unless you'd like to buy one. But I'm handing them out because I want to talk about some of the pictures. And the first picture I want to talk about in the book is the very last page. The very last page is where you are right now. is soot from Victorian steam locomotives. And the train you'll hear beneath your feet. First train to come through here were steam trains in 1869. This huge chamber was built above the ground. It was built above the ground on an enormous iron ring and then sunk into the soft earth. So think of it as a demented pastry cutter. And if you look at page 30, you'll see what I mean. A demented pastry cutter. But for the engineer, this is the world's first caisson. And Brunel was the first person to understand the best way to build below the ground is to build above the ground and sink it. So the first thing to tell you, where you're sitting now used to be 50 feet in midair. The second thing to tell you, six people died in here. The tunnel, which stretches behind me underneath the river, the tunnel is very close to the riverbed. If you look at the cover of the book, and I'm handing these out because I want to talk about the pictures, it makes sense of the story, but I'll collect the books in again at the end, unless you'd like to buy one as a souvenir of your adventure. These are sponsored by the Heritage Lottery Fund and the civil engineers, and they cost £5 if you'd like to keep it. On the cover of the book, you see a watercolour of the tunnel, and it's by Brunel, Marc Brunel, the Frenchman. And the first thing you notice is the distance between the crown of the tunnel and the riverbed. It's not very much. It's actually only 14 feet, less than 5 metres below the riverbed, which is too close. It's too close because just below the tunnel was a 50-foot deep bed of quicksand, so they couldn't go deeper. Today, they would freeze the workings or they'd compress the workings. Do you hear the train below our feet? Today, there are ways round it, but in Brunel's day, he had to thread his tunnel below the riverbed and above the quicksand. And because it's so close to the riverbed, 6 men drowned in here. Drowned in the darkness, a terrible thing. There were 5 floods altogether. And in one terrible flood in 1828, the river broke into the workings and flooded this chamber. 2 men reached the safety of the staircase, and you can see the line of it on the wall there. 2 reached the safety of the staircase, but the force of the water was so great it tore them off the staircase and sucked them down beneath your feet to their deaths. So, you imagine that, just in case you want. You imagine that. 6 men drowned in here. As luck would have it, 1 man escaped. He was rescued from the top of the shaft and revived and sent more dead than alive to Bristol to convalesce, where he designed a bridge, built a railway, built a steamship, built another steamship, and then came back to work on his biggest project ever, the ship that he launched at Millwall, the Great Eastern, the biggest ship in the world. A ship is another train, a ship so big it could steam from here to Australia and back again without refueling. A ship so big. Have you seen the Shard on the river?
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest, it's the tallest building in Europe for, I think, another 4 weeks. There's always one behind. Yeah? Brunel's ship, the Great Eastern, was the biggest ship in the world, and it was 50 years before they built a bigger one. And that was the Lusitania that brought America into the war. The Great Eastern was 5 times bigger than anything else afloat. Our most famous engineer began and almost ended his career in this chamber, Isambard Kingdom Brunel, working with his father, aged 19, nearly drowned here, aged 21. The Brunel Museum proudly boasts we half-drowned him, and we launched him, because everything he's famous for happened after that accident. And if he hadn't been saved, the world would be a very different place. So the second thing to tell you, our most famous engineer began and almost ended in this secret underground chamber. And the third thing to tell you, I said it upstairs. For 145 years, no one has been in here. The Thames Tunnel Company sold the tunnel beneath your feet in this chamber to the railway in 1865. And the railway took out the staircase, a wooden staircase. They took out the wooden staircase because they're going to run steam trains through here. So there'll be sparks, fire, tinder, smoke. The last place you need a wooden staircase. They took out the wooden staircase, they sealed the pedestrian access. So for 145 years, access was impossible. If you found that little entrance that we stooped through, you'd have come through and fallen to your deaths onto the railway lines, which, as you have heard, are just below where you're sitting. So for 145 years, this space was inaccessible, completely inaccessible. But if you're a Londoner, you'll know that the London, the East London line was closed for 2 years. It was closed so they could extend it. It was only 8 stops long, but they extended it north and south, and they've now almost completed an orbital railway. It'll be like the Circle Line, but further out. And the idea is it reduces congestion in the centre of the city. That engineering works gave us the opportunity to install this floor. This is just a few weeks old. And it was funded and installed by Balfour Beatty Carillion engineers on the London Overground. It was a very generous gift to the museum and the local community. It cost £250,000. And it means, for the first time in 145 years, albeit by temporary staircase and by narrow entrance, we can invite people down into this chamber. You are amongst the first people in 145 years to enter this space where our most famous engineer began and almost ended his career. Now that noise is the pumps. They are still pumping water out of the tunnel. All tunnels and all ships let in water. It's only a problem if it's coming in faster than you can pump it out. or if the pumps stop working. So that's a very reassuring noise. That's the introduction. If you'd like to stay a little longer, I'd like to tell you about some of the odd things that happened out here and why this space is so important. But if you want to go back for another cocktail, I'm going to talk for another 15 minutes. But you can leave if you like. I shan't be offended. Okay. The first thing I'd like you to look at, if you're still on page 31, which is the sinking tower, go forward a page to 32, and you should see this. Mm-hmm. And you're in here. This is the sinking tower. You're at the bottom of that. And here, do you see, there's a crisscross design on a neighbouring building. This is a sculpture Mark Brunel put up in brick and timber to explain to people what was going on beneath their feet. Has everyone got it? Is it page 32?
Yes.
It's at the top of page 32. It's not as big as this. Yeah?
Got it?
Yeah.
This is a life-size sculpture of the miner's cage. Now, the real miner's cage was made of iron, and it was lowered in sections into this hole. It was assembled below where I'm standing. The men crawled into these cages. Each of those little boxes is the size of a man. There are 36 of them. And each man in each cage inches his way under the river. And as he inches forward, the cages are pushed forwards. If you look on the facing page, you can see side on the jacks that are pushing the cages forwards. And as the cages are pushed forwards, bricklayers working behind the men build the tunnel walls. And that's the only way you can dig through soft earth. Inside a cage, so it doesn't cave in on you. Digging in narrow strips, so the exposure to danger is limited. And as you dig, slowly move forwards and build the walls behind you. At least, that's the theory. Unfortunately, the wooden planks kept back the soft earth, but not the water. So the men working in these cages were showered with Thames water from the beginning to the end of their shift. It wouldn't be pleasant today, but in 1825, the Thames is the biggest open sewer in the world. So it doesn't bear thinking about. They're not just dodging sewage, they're dodging flames, because they're digging through what was recently marsh. And when you get marsh and rotting vegetation, you get marsh gas or methane. The men don't work in the dark, that would be unreasonable. They each have an oil lamp, which of course ignites the methane. So there are flames as well as sewage shooting from the cages where these poor men are. It is the worst job in the world. But they only work two-hour shifts. After 2 hours, they collapse. And they're carried out and replaced by men who are still breathing. And they work until they fall over and they're replaced in their turn. And in this way, they inch their way under the River Thames. If it sounds crude, remember this. Before Brunel, the way they built tunnels was they dug trenches. They put what they want in the trench and they cover it over. It's called the cut and cover method. And the first underground railway in the world, the Metropolitan Line, is a cut and cover method. It's trenches covered over. Now, the cut and cover method doesn't work under rivers. It doesn't work under arms of the sea. And the significant thing about this project is for the first time anywhere in the world, Brunel is building a tunnel by burrowing a hole instead of digging a trench. And where we're sitting now, this is an international landmark site because it's the birthplace of the tube. Not just for London, but for everywhere. You take a metro journey anywhere in the world, and in a real sense, your journey began here because modern tunnel methods are based on this. And I'm going to read you just a sentence. As well as attractive souvenir books, we have story cards. And we have a celebrity story on each one. This is Peter Ackroyd. It was a brutal and fearful business, but by these means, Brunel helped to fashion a system that is in use all over the world. The underground or tube system could not have been created without his precedent. He was indeed a lord of the underworld. This is the birthplace of mass urban transport, and the modern tunnel boring machines are simply automated developments of this human tunnel boring machine here. People talk of Brunel's legacy, and they usually mean his steam locomotives and his steamships, his bridges and his railways. But for me, well, of course I would say it, but think about it. For me, this tunnel, which he worked on with his father, is his most important legacy. Because the legacy of this tunnel is the world city. World cities cannot operate without a fast, efficient way of moving people into the city, moving people around the city once they're there, and moving people out of the city at the end of the day. Our world cities are only possible because of Brunel's pioneering tunnel beneath your feet. There are 4 international landmark sites in this country. This is the most important. There are 250 in the world. This is in the top 10. So that's the engineering. But now let me tell you about some of the odd things that went on. If you turn to page 40, this is the picture. Work proceeded very well. Within 2 years, they were half the way under the river. But there was a flood. Now, thankfully, no one was killed. But the Brunels have a public relations disaster. They take out a little boat, they drop clay bags into the hole, and they plug it. They pump the tunnel dry, and they rebuild the miner's cage, but they can't resume work. They have no money. This is a fundraising event. And it's the world's first underwater fundraising event. This is a long table in the tunnels beneath your feet the trains now travel through. They covered it with white damask cloth. The place settings are solid silver. The glass is crystal. And the great and the good dined under the river sumptuously. If you look at the end of the table, do you see a red platform? And above the red platform, you can just make out the glint of the instruments of the band of the Coldstream Guards, who played for them as they ate. And they played Rule Britannia, obviously. They played the national anthem. They played See the Conquering Hero Comes. Not for Brunel, but for this man here, do you see? Seated on the left is the Duke of Wellington, a longtime supporter of the Brunel family. And ever since the Battle of Waterloo, whenever the Duke turned up anywhere, they played See the Conquering Hero Comes, especially loudly if there were any of a French persuasion in earshot. Now, the band of the Coldstream Guards are quite noisy above ground. Imagine for a moment being invited to a dinner party in a cave under a river, where a regimental band is billed to play patriotic music through the evening. It was deafening. There was no small talk at this dinner party. There wasn't even big talk. They just ate and drank and prayed they would run out of sheet music. And it's not certain how good the food was carried all that distance, but as a piece of public relations, it's brilliant. If it's safe enough to have a banquet down there, it's safe enough for you, as potential investors, to take up a second subscription. And that's what happened. Foreground, you see these two figures? You've probably guessed, Brunel, father and son. The original is in the museum. Have a look at it in the upper gallery. It's the only picture that exists of the two men together. Even more remarkable, Marc Brunel, the father, wasn't there. But the artist thought he should be, so he put him in. And before Photoshop, this is the huge advantage of oil painting over camera. And the story of the world's first underwater fundraising event is told by historian and broadcaster Dan Snow. And I'm going to read you just a sentence again. I was proud to film in the Brunel's tunnel for the BBC. My own father, Peter Snow. Now, does anyone remember Peter Snow? Quite eccentric. On election nights, he had a swingometer which predicted where the seats would go. And he and Dan, his son, they do a lot of programs on battleground archaeology. My own father, Peter Snow, does not appear in the frame, but I have worked so often alongside him that I always feel he is there. I am very moved by Isambard's relationship with his father. So, Dan Snow. The next picture, I want you to look at page 44 and 45 on your way to it. It's a double spread, and it's the Thames, crowded with shipping, the busiest river in the world. 3,000 tall masted ships in the river every day. 10,000 little boats. There's only a narrow gap in the middle for more cargo to come up and cargo to leave. It's the biggest traffic jam in the world. It's so busy, they say it takes longer to get stuff across the Thames than it takes to get stuff across the Atlantic. And the tunnel was built beneath your feet to move cargo. But they ran out of money. Turn forwards 2 pages, and you see the plan that was never completed. In the middle, the river. On the right-hand page, you're in that small circle. But next to it, you see there's a big circle. They were going to build another shaft, 4 times the size of this, with ramps to take horse and cart and cargo down to the tunnel and across to the other side. But they ran out of money. Brunel thought it would take 3 years to inch his way under the river to Wapping. It took 18 years. Men grew old and died building this tunnel. Because they couldn't build the ramps, what they opened was a cargo tunnel that couldn't take cargo. Turn to page 54. It opened as a pedestrian tunnel, as a very generously proportioned pedestrian tunnel. The cargo tunnel you couldn't get cargo into. It opened as a visitor attraction. And on the first day in 1843, there were 50,000 visitors. On the first day, 50,000 people filed down that narrow wooden staircase. By the end of the third month, there were 1 million visitors. Now, that's a lot of people, but in 1843, that is half the population of London. In the first 3 months, you are sitting in the most successful visitor attraction in the world at the time, in the world. They were mobbed, but the visitors only pay a penny. A Thames waterman will row you across for a penny. You can walk across Old London Bridge with all the arches and all the shops for a penny. The fare for crossing the river is a penny. So they're losing money. The plan was, the business plan, allowed for carts moving cargo under the river and hefty tolls from the East India Company. Rotherhithe, where you are now, this is an East India Company town. They couldn't get the cargo down there. The visitors only pay a penny each. So, do you see there are arches? There are archways. This is the northbound tunnel. Imagine where my hand is the southbound tunnel. And these arches interconnect the tunnels. In each of those archways, and you can see them, by the way, from Wapping. If you take the train north before you leave, get off the train, wait at the end of the platform where the stairs are, and the train following yours will light up the arches where the shops used to be. Because this is the world's first underwater shopping arcade. 60 shops. 60 shops selling souvenirs. And if you look through the book, or if you go to the upper gallery in the museum, you see examples of souvenirs sold under the River Thames. Thames Tunnel gin flasks, Thames Tunnel pincushions, Thames Tunnel snuff boxes, Thames Tunnel coffee cups, Thames Tunnel cigar cutters, Thames Tunnel nurseryware, not even babies escaped, a little plate with a little tunnel in the middle and the alphabet around it. If they'd had baseball caps, they'd have sold Thames Tunnel baseball caps. And this is a very early example of what is technically known as aggressive marketing of site-specific merchandise. Or tourist tat, as you may have come across it. And they sold these items by the million to the visitors.